any regrets?
You know, I used to have regrets. When you're young, you have regrets. But you can't have everything. Look for the positive things and be happy with what you have accomplished and do what you feel you'd like to do yet in life.
Hello and welcome to the Psych Files, what psychology is really all about. Michael Britt here, and this is episode 104, in which we're going to talk about positive affirmations and self-esteem. This episode opened up with a quote, a little snippet from an interview with Roy, who is now 93 and a half, and he's doing strong, he's just doing great, His words are inspirational, there's no doubt about that. But part of what they imply is that if you have a positive attitude, you're going to live a long time. And we have to be careful when we make assumptions like that, because is Roy, or has he lived to this age thanks to this positive attitude? Or is he simply lived to this age because of his genes? And he just happens to have a positive attitude as well. Also, do we ever interview people who are in their 90s who have a negative attitude? Probably not. So there's an implied kind of causation here that positive outlooks will make you live longer. But one interview with Roy doesn't prove that. And that's something to keep in mind. Inspirational thoughts, but how important is this positive mindset? And by the way, before we get into the episode, just wanted to mention that at the end of the episode, got a couple of announcements and something for free. So hey, stick in there and there'll be a little reward at the end of the episode. A really interesting research that came out recently called Positive Self-Statements, and it's by Joanne Wood, W.Q. Elaine Perunovic, and John W. Lee. Very interesting article recently published in Psychological Science. So, positive affirmations. Now, they've been around a long time, people saying positive things to themselves, like, I'm a lovable person. There are affirmations for just about anything that you feel you would like to improve in your life. There are books that will give you affirmations on a whole variety of topics, depending upon what part of yourself you'd like to improve. If you are not good with money, then there are affirmations in which you would say things like, I enjoy money, I attract money into my life. So I think if you just do a Google search on affirmations or positive affirmations, you'll find a lot of them as well, and there are books out. So the question is, do these positive affirmations really positively affect us? Do they change our attitudes? This article, let me just read you a couple of quotes from the intro. Quote, we propose that, contrary to popular belief, positive self-statements can be useless for some people, even though they may benefit others. They may even backfire. Now, how could that be? They refer to other research, which I was not familiar with, and I think is really very interesting. They refer to this idea proposed by Sharif in Hovland way back in 1961. Can you imagine? Called Latitudes of Acceptance. Now, you know, typical a title that doesn't really reveal much about what it means, but if you are a student who, let's say, is not very good at math, and your teacher says, oh, no, you're great at math. Well, that position is very far apart from your own. And when someone tries to do that, to try to convince you of something which is just so extremely different from what you think, you're probably not going to be influenced by that. So, on the other hand, if your teacher said, no, that's pretty good, you know, you're getting good at math, that may have some influence. So, for teachers out there, I mean, you don't want to tell someone who's not good at something that they're fantastic at it. That's not going to help. In fact, it's going to move them in the other direction because, you know, young people are smarter than we give them credit for. And if they know that if you're trying that hard to convince them of an opposite of, you know, some extreme position, then they even feel worse about where they're at because they know that you're trying to convince them of something. They know that you're trying really hard and it actually leads them in the other direction. So this is kind of an interesting idea, this latitudes of acceptance. And where they bring it in because they say, if you have low self-esteem and someone says to you, well, try positive affirmations, and the affirmation is something like, I love myself, I am wonderful, people love me. And this is something that was made fun of quite some time back on Saturday Night Live with that character whose name was Stuart Smalley, and it was Al Franken who looked in a mirror and said all the positive things to himself. I think positive affirmations do get some negative press, and that they do get made fun of, but plenty of people will recommend positive affirmations to you. So their idea here is that if you have low self-esteem and you say these things which are so far from your current belief in yourself that you'll reject them. So just to continue from these authors, quote, we reason that positive self-statements may have effects similar to those of overly positive feedback. When people feel deficient in some quality, positive self-statements may highlight the discrepancy between their deficiency, and the standard they would like to meet. We further propose that positive self-statements are especially likely to backfire for the very people they are meant to benefit, people with low self-esteem. Okay, whereas people with high self-esteem will probably accept the positive affirmations. Okay, so what did they do? Well, a couple of studies in here, and just two of them I think are really interesting. Good old undergraduate psychology students. In one case, they had here about 249 of them took a question. They took a self-esteem questionnaire, and then they took a questionnaire about how often they use positive self-affirmations, and found something not terribly surprising. Quote, people with higher self-esteem reported using positive self-statements more often than people with low self-esteem. So, I mean, that just kind of confirms that people with high self-esteem are okay saying things like, I feel good about myself. But people with low self-esteem don't use those that often, which either indicates, again, it's just a survey, that either says, well, maybe they should use them more often, or they don't use them because they don't work for them. Quote, the higher their self-esteem, the more helpful students said the statements were. And the lower their self-esteem, the more they said that positive affirmations, quote, sometimes make me feel worse rather than better. Okay, so that's just a survey. So, that's one way to do it. Then they did a study, an experiment. All right, that's, as we all know, a much more stronger way to get at causality. Now, here they brought in some college students and asked them to repeat a statement, which was, quote, I am a lovable person. Okay, somewhat typical positive affirmation. And here they had 68 intro psych students, 32 men, 36 women, and randomly assigned to two conditions. I love this kind of study. Gave them a self-esteem questionnaire, made sure that they were about equal on self-esteem to start with, and that's important. Now, they say here that the experimenter was blind to participants' self-esteem. Now, that actually means if the experimenter is blind and the students or participants are blind, you got a double-blind situation there. Okay, so they were asked to write down any thoughts and feelings they had during a four-minute period. And then in one condition, the positive affirmation condition, students were told that every time they heard the sound of a doorbell, they should repeat to themselves, I am a lovable person. And the doorbell occurred at about 15-second intervals. Okay, so there you go. They're given a task to basically fill some time, and then one group does the affirmations. Okay, so that's the manipulation there. What did they measure? They measured mood, and they measured their self-esteem. So what'd they get? Quote, repeating the positive self-statement did not bring mood in the low self-esteem group up to the high self-esteem level. Instead, it widened the difference between the groups. Participants in the low self-esteem group felt worse, whereas participants in the high self-esteem group felt better. So just to talk a bit about self-esteem. This is a big topic, and occasionally I will drop in at Yahoo Answers, where psychology students go and they ask questions about psychology. And so, you know, if I know the answer, I'll drop in an answer. If you don't know about Yahoo Answers, I think it's answers.yahoo.com, and go in psychology and you can ask any kind of question in there. And most of the people who are in Yahoo Answers are college students and high school students. And what I see a lot are questions about self-esteem. And either they say self-esteem, or they say, you know, I don't have any confidence. What can I do? How can I feel better about myself? This is a big issue from looking at just that one place. But there's an interesting article that appeared actually in a book here called Current Directions in Adulthood and Aging. This is a reading from the Association for Psychological Science. So it is a sort of a summary of self-esteem from about 9 years old all the way up into the late 80s. So 80-year-old, that is. And this kind of gives us a sense of what happens to self-esteem as we go through life. Very interesting little chapter in this book. It's called Self-Esteem Development Across the Lifespan by Richard Robbins and Callie Trzesniewski. And what does it say? Very interesting chart. I'll see if I can replicate this and put it on the website. Self-esteem goes up and down throughout your life. Where is it highest? Well, it's highest between the years 9 to 12. And I have now they're 9 years old. Children will come up to you and they'll give you a picture that they drew. And they'll very proudly give you that picture, even if by any objective standard it's pretty poor. I mean, you know, children usually aren't very good at drawing, and so they don't really understand perspective. And so if they draw a table, the four legs of the table will go out in all directions or something like that. Or if they draw a horse or a cat, the feet will all be in line, you know, that kind of thing. It's kind of funny. But anyway, you know, kids can't draw, and yet they'll proudly give you their drawings. And if you say, hey, this is great, you know, a child will go, I know, or yep, you know. I remember recently telling my daughter something positive about herself, and her answer was just, yep. So kids, before they hit the teen years, haven't really begun to compare themselves to other kids. And as they begin to do that, guess what? Among the lowest places in your life, when your self-esteem will be its lowest, is when you're a teenager. And this happens for men and women. Boys, their self-esteem doesn't seem to drop as much. That is the place for girls where their self-esteem is really low. And, you know, this is where things start to happen, right? Puberty kicks in. There's all these bodily changes. You start going into middle school and high school, and there's all the groups, the cliques that develop, and you're part of this group but not part of that group. It's a rough time, and your self-esteem is going to be low. And you know, the thing is, it's probable, at least it seems that way to me, that you can repeat self-affirmations as much as you want. But this is a tough time in life. And I don't know that positive affirmations are going to increase at this point. It's going to be really tough to feel good about yourself when it's pretty natural that you're not, because you're just discovering what other people can do. And in our society, it may even be made worse, you know, because we, through the internet and television, you're exposed to some of the most successful people in the world. You know, if you're watching Hannah Montana, for example, I mean, she's a very successful person, very attractive. She's got everything. That's kind of a high standard to compare yourself against. Perhaps in the olden days, we didn't have that, but now we do. So that's a tough point. So at that point, so your self-esteem's lowest during those teen years, starts to go up, kind of levels off a bit in your mid to 20s, throughout your 30s, goes up a bit when you're between, let's say, 45 and looks like about 65. Yeah, it goes up in there. That's probably your most productive time in life when you're, you know, doing well in your job. And then according to this chart, the self-esteem drops again as you get into your 70s. Although they have an interesting quote here to explain that. Here's a quote from this chapter. This decline in the 70s may be due to the dramatic confluence of changes that occur in this age, including changes in roles. In other words, people retire, relationships, loss of a spouse, right? People around you die, physical functioning declines, right? So you can't do as much as you used to be able to do. And they say that this, quote, the old age decline may also reflect a shift toward a more modest, humble, and balanced view of the self in old age. Older people are, quote, increasingly willing to acknowledge their faults and limitations and have a diminished need to present themselves in a positive light to others. Very interesting. Well, here's my thoughts on this. It seems to me that positive affirmations probably aren't that helpful. And I feel a bit like I'm, you know, raining on people's parades, or being the party pooper in saying that. This study that was done on college students and showed that it really didn't help that much. In fact, it may even be damaging. I suppose if you're older, I don't know that it could be harmful, you know, to listen to positive affirmations. It's sort of like, well, I guess it can't hurt kind of thing. And I think that's probably true once you get a little bit older. I think the problem with positive affirmations is that they're so general. They're so vague. Now, if you're feeling down about yourself, there's so many reasons why that could be. Of course, could be biological. It could be sort of a deep-seated thing, something that needs to be looked at, you know, in psychotherapy. Or, you know, it could be that you've had some experience recently that was negative. Maybe you had an argument with your spouse or with your boyfriend. And I think that the better approach would be to take a look at what's going through your head. What are you telling yourself about that experience, about that argument, about that breakup? What are the cognitions that you have specifically? What are you saying? And here I'm referring back to the cognitive therapies that have been set out many years ago by Aaron Beck and Martin Seligman. I've talked about these in a previous episode. You need to look at the rationality of the things you're saying to yourself. If you're saying, you know, I'm stupid, I'm unlovable. If you're saying things that attribute your problems to internal states that are not only internal, like I'm stupid, but as Seligman might say, it's pervasive. You might be saying to yourself, well, I'm going to do poorly on this test, and I'm going to do too poorly. I'm probably going to fail out of college, or I'm going to lose this job. If you start getting out of control, okay, and, you know, sort of, you know, you're just kind of letting this ball roll downhill here, and it's starting to gather all the other things in your life. If you have a good friend, or someone who can sort of impartially talk to you, and you can express these, what it is you're saying to yourself, then someone will probably tell you, look, hold on, let's just talk about this particular problem here. Let's put a lid on all of those thoughts that are getting a little out of control there. And then you can talk specifically about what exactly happened between you and your wife, or your boyfriend, or your boss, or what happened in this class that contributed to this failure on the test. Be very specific, and then look at what you're saying to yourself. If you're saying things like, I'll never, or you know, I'll never do that, or I'll always, those extreme terms typically point to something that's irrational. All right? So you feel badly about yourself because you're saying things to yourself that are, you know, really negative. If you look at that, and either you by yourself, and you can do this by yourself, go off, you know, take a walk, think about these things, you know, talk to yourself, and consider, well, all right, let me just hold on here. Let me see if I can say a few more, you know, say things that are to myself a little bit more positive. Let me just try to be constructive about this and seek a solution. That's going to be more helpful to you than saying something like, all right, let me just say positive affirmations. I'm a lovable person. People love me. I'm good at this. Those are very vague remarks, which you're not going to believe. I think you are going to reject them, because if you've just had a breakup or a problem at work, you've just lost your job, I think these general affirmations are not going to be specifically helpful to you. And that's why I think affirmations, perhaps they are harmless, but I think your time is better spent looking carefully at what you're saying to yourself. And the thing about affirmations is that it's easy. for someone, some kind of author or motivational speaker, to recommend something very general like that. Because they have to, because they don't know you. But they want to sell you on a product that makes you think it's going to be helpful. But where all this confidence comes from in affirmations, I really don't know. I don't think there's any evidence to support that they work. So that's where it's at. Sorry again to be a party pooper. As I say, though, probably can hurt, but could be a problem for younger people, particularly in those teen years. You need to give feedback to them that is positive, constructive, you know, realistic. Okay, that's our episode for today. Let's see, I said I had a couple of announcements. They are that I've started a new podcast called Cool Teaching Tools, and that is www.coolteachingtools.com, and it'll be an all-video podcast in which I review some of the really neat online tools and software tools for teaching. So if you're a teacher or a student, I think you'll find that interesting. Lots of new things. There are ways to go beyond a PowerPoint and do some really neat stuff on the web. It's possible, and it can be inexpensive. So check that out, www.coolteachingtools.com. And secondly, as I think I've mentioned in previous episodes, I now have an iPhone application. For those of you who need to memorize the parts of the brain for an upcoming test, a mnemonics tool, lots of crazy, wacky images to help you remember what the heck the hypothalamus does, and what does the thalamus do, and how is that different, and what is the amygdala, and all that kind of thing. So, here's the thing. If you have an iPod Touch or an iPhone, it will work on those devices, and so if you email me, I've got 9 promotional codes. And so I'll be happy to give them to the first 9 people who email me. I only ask that you go to the App Store and give the app an honest review. There's a review in there now. It's somewhat negative, and I think it's because the person didn't understand that this application, it's called Brain Mnemonics, but I think that person didn't understand this is really intended for intro psych students or social work students. Even nurses have used the Brain Mnemonics. So it's you get about 25 mnemonics, which I think are pretty cool. So if you email me, I'll give you a promo code. You can get it for free. Otherwise, it's only $2.99, and hopefully it'll be helpful to you if you're taking a course. And I only ask that you give it a review in the App Store. And if you don't have an iPhone or an iPod Touch, no problem. You can still buy the Brain Mnemonics on my website as a downloadable PDF document. This document and the iPhone app both contain crazy, wacky images to help you remember the parts of the brain and the neuron. Okay, that's that, and I will see you next time on The Psych Files. www.thepsychfiles.com. Take care.